be Janavava Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Vajra Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjavihari. Gopi Jana Bhava Giridhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjavihari. Jaya Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvajakacharya Astar Sata Sri Sri Mad, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, The Marriage of Kardama Muni and Devahuti, Text 25. Ashok Nuvan Tad Viraham Munchan Bashpa Kalam Mahu Asenchad Amba Vatseti Natrodire Duhitu Shukaha, Shikaha, Shaknivam Sadviraham, Munchan Bashpa Kalam Muhu, Asencharam Bhavatseti, Nechodai Duhitu Shikaha. Ashak Nuvam Stadviraham Munchan Bashpa Kalam Mahu Asencharam Bhavatseti Netro dar duhitu sikaha. Ashak nuvam stadviraham. Munchan baspa kalam mahu. Asenchadam bhavatseti. Netro dar duhitu sikaha. Vaishnavis. Ashaknuvam, being unable to bear. Tadviraham, separation from her. Munchan, shedding. Bashvakalam, tears. Mahu, again and again. Asenchad, he drenched. Amba, my dear mother. Vatsa, my dear daughter. Iti, thus. Netra Udai, by the water from his eyes. Duhitu, of his daughter. Shikaha, the locks of hair. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. The emperor was unable to bear the separation of his daughter. Therefore, tears poured from his eyes again and again, drenching his daughter's head as he cried, "My dear mother, my dear daughter." Purport. The word Amba is significant. A father sometimes addresses his daughter in affection as mother, and sometimes as my darling. The feeling of separation occurs because until the daughter is married, she remains the daughter of the father. But after her marriage, she is no longer claimed as a daughter in the family. She must go to the husband's house. For after marriage, she becomes the property of the husband. According to Manu Samhita, a woman is never independent. she must remain the property of the husband until she is elderly and has grown up children of her own. In her old age, when the husband has taken sannyas and left home, she remains the property of the sons. A woman is always dependent, either upon the father, husband, or elderly sons. That will be exhibited in the life of Devahuti. Devahuti's father handed her over responsibly. Devahuti's father handed over responsibility for her to the husband, Kardama Muni. And in the same way, Kardama Muni also left home, giving the responsibility to his son, Kapila Dev. This narration will describe these events one after another. Om Gyanatimarandasyaganashanashalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So there are a couple of topics mentioned in the purport. One is the feelings of separation of Swayambhuva Manu from his daughter, Devahuti. Another is the idea that the woman becomes the property of the husband, the father, the sons at different stages of life. And again, finally, there's another reference to separation. So, feelings of affection of a person for another person is a feature of existence as persons. You know, the soul ultimately is part and parcel of Krishna, mamaivamso jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. The soul is eternally part and parcel of Krishna. And as Krishna has relationships and affectionate relationships with his different eternal associates, so also the soul has a tendency to develop affectionate relationships with others. It's a question of emphasis. If everything is in relationship to Krishna, then one's relationships with Krishna's parts and parcels will also be in order. But if one comes under the influence of false ego, ahankara, the desire to enjoy independently from Krishna, then these relationships with others become problematic. So, if Krishna's in the center, then everything works out. Sometimes devotees like Kunti Devi pray that Krishna sever their affectionate relationships with others because they feel that on the basis of those relationships, they're asking for something selfish from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Queen Kunti says, Sneha Pasham Imam Chandi. Cut off my relationships, affectionate relationships with the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. And they were the two branches of Krishna's relations that she was connected with, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. So sometimes they pray like that. And sometimes they manifest detachment from these kinds of relationships. Like King Chitraketu was desiring a son. He had millions of wives, but none of them had delivered him a son. So he was constantly praying for a son. So he got that by the benedictions of Narada Muni and another sage who was a friend of his. And the name of the son was called Harshashoka. He'll bring happiness and distress. That's the nature of material relationships. So the king was very happy to get a son after a long time from one of his wives, but her co-wives were envious and they poisoned the child. And the child died, which means the soul left the body. So the body was still there. They were conducting the funeral ceremonies. And Narada Muni appeared on the scene and confronted the soul of the departed child and said, "You died untimely. You know, you were killed. So I can arrange for you. You can get back into your body and you can spend the rest of your normal span of life and bring joy to your mother and father." And the child's soul said, "What mother and father are you talking about? I've had millions of lifetimes. And which one are you talking about?" Yeah, and the child went on to deliver a discourse about how relationships in the material world are temporary. And the real permanent relationship is the relationship, the eternal relationship of the soul to Lord Krishna. Otherwise, we're just like phantoms chasing a phantasmagoria. We identify with a false image of ourselves. You know, I mean, I do it to some extent. We identify with a false image of ourselves. I'm man, I'm woman, I'm American, I'm this, I'm that. We have a concept of ourself under the influence of false ego, and we judge everything by how we think that false perception of ourself will benefit in some way. And so it's not a real self. So it's like we're chasing after a phantom, and in that, you know, we're trying to imagine how that phantom can connect with so many temporary material things. The phantasmagoria of material existence. So, therefore, like devotees like Queen Kunti, she prayed, "Cut off all my attachments to these false relationships. And let my attraction flow to you only, Lord Krishna." Just like the Ganges flows inexorably to the sea. Or in the case of the son of Chitraketu, as I said, he presented a discourse about the nature of these temporary relationships and what the real relationship is. So, but nevertheless, in the purport to the prayers of his purports to the prayers of Queen Kunti, Prabhupada points out, although she's asking to have her relations cut off, they're natural. It's natural that a soul, a person, is going to develop affectionate relationships with others because that's Krishna's nature, and the soul, being part and parcel of Krishna's nature, also has that tendency. But while we're in the material world and we have these material bodies, gross and subtle, and we have our body composed of mind, intelligence, false ego, and then there's the gross physical body made of the material elements. It's dehinasminyatadehe. We're not the material bodies. That's the first lesson of spiritual life. So Krishna gives direction how one can live in this world in a material body in its gross and subtle aspects and conduct relationships with other souls in material bodies in such a way that one's material and spiritual desires and needs are all met. So that's the purpose of Varnashram Dharma, to give people a way in which they can exist in this world. They can have affectionate relationships with family members, relatives, friends, and at the same time make progress towards evoking or establishing their eternal relationship with Krishna. And that includes relationships with all of Krishna's parts and parcels as well. So that's one aspect of this. Then comes this other part about the woman becoming the property of the father, the husband, the sons. Srila Prabhupada was asked about this. You know, he was on a train ride in India with some of his disciples, and they were talking about different topics, and this topic came up. That one devotee, as devotees sometimes do, presented Prabhupada with a whole bunch of questions. They say this, they say that. You know, so he's saying there was one Christian minister, he's pointing out that Krishna can't be God because he's immoral. You know, he engages in affairs with the wives of other men. He has thousands of wives. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada's response was, so they think sex is bad. But why are they after? If it's bad, bad for Krishna, it should be bad for them. So why are they after it? And and he said, also, it's all Krishna's property. Everything comes from Krishna, including all the souls, the eternal souls. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. Everything is coming from me. Bhoktaram jagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices, and everything belongs to me. Or Ishivasyamidam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatam Jagat. And the Sri Upanishad, Krishna declares, it's all my property, everything. Everything is coming from me. It's my energy. Jadmadhyasya yataha. So Krishna is not enjoying somebody else's property. He's enjoying his own. And he said, you're trying to take one or more of Krishna's associates and have her as your own. So you're bad. You're the one who's stealing. So ultimately, when I see statements like this, I think, you know, there are different perspectives on property, who owns everything. You know, and a devotee is supposed to see from the point of view of Krishna. So from the point of view of Krishna, everything is his property. Whether we're talking about his marginal potency, his internal potency, or his external potency. His internal potency is the potency by which he manifests the spiritual world. His marginal potency is us, the jiva souls. And his external potency is the potency by which he manifests material reality. So we're on the margin. We have our choice to either go towards the spiritual or go towards the material. So if we're on the spiritual path, then Krishna makes an arrangement individually and socially in terms of the varnas and the ashramas so that there can be relationships between male and female, man and woman, that are according to the principles of Dharma. And Krishna says that he is sex life that is carried out according to those principles. But this idea of property, it's and you know, I was just thinking, if something is someone's property, they take care of it very nicely. If it's somebody else's property, they don't care about it so much. But seems even in modern contemporary society, this idea that a spouse's property, you know, there's kind of a contract, there are all kinds of contractual relationships, licenses, what happens with assets if the marriage is dissolved. So there seems to be, even in our modern society, a lot of emphasis on what belongs to who in those kind of relationships. But ultimately, the best way to look at it is everything is Krishna's property and is meant to be used in his service. And according to that verse in the Isupanishad, Ishivasyamidam Sarvam, everything is Krishna's property, but one is entitled to his allotted portion. And Krishna describes what our allotted portion is if we want to engage in these kinds of relationships. The allotted portion is that you get one husband or wife, in this modern world at least, you know, in in other times, it was appropriate for a suitable husband to have more than one wife in some cases. And at one point, Srila Prabhupada was thinking of introducing that in the modern world, but he decided after giving it full consideration that that shouldn't be done. Another feature of the relationships with Krishna is Krishna may have had thousands of wives, but the result of that was the generation of offspring who were very qualified, very intelligent, very beautiful. And his point was that ordinary people in this age of Kali, the way that they have offspring results in Varna Shankara, offspring that cause a lot of disturbance in the world. So there's an arrangement that Krishna has made that men and women, they can live together in a marriage and have Krishna conscious offspring that are beneficial to the world. So, and the final thing that's mentioned here is the feelings of separation. And yes, there is separation between Devahuti and her father. You know, there's relationships connected with that. And because of those, because of that feeling of separation, Swayambhuva Manu is showering tears. And we see that also in the relationship of the pure devotees and Krishna. When the devotees are feeling separation from Lord Krishna, it's like Lord Chaitanya was praying, that tears come from his eyes, and a moment feels like yugas, vast periods of time are passing. Yugayatam nimishena chakshusha pravrishayatam. So Lord Chaitanya prayed like that, that when those feelings of separation from Krishna are there, his eyes shoot out showers of tears. So that is very much a part of our movement. Yeah, there are two aspects to the loving relationship of the souls with Krishna. Sambhoga, meeting, and vipralamba, separation. And the feelings of separation are considered to be a more intense form of love than the form that's expressed in the joy of meeting. So our acharyas have manifested this separation aspect of devotional service, where we find the six Goswamis are roaming around Vrindavan, not saying, oh, I've met Krishna, but they're thinking, where is Krishna? Because the feelings of love are intensified in that mood of separation. And that's reflected in the separation Sometimes people feel in the material world in terms of material relationships as well. But in the devotional form, those feelings of separation are a form of ecstasy. So, as Srila Prabhupada is explaining, this relationship of Devahuti and Kardama Muni is going to be further developed. You'll follow things through to the very end. And we have that to look forward to, as Srila Prabhupada says. This narration will describe these events one after another. So we're going to be a long time with Kardama Muni and Devahuti and Lord Kapila Dev. Many important lessons for us. And I've just attempted to bring out some tiny dust particles of meaning from this verse today. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes, Naikatma.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. I just wanted to ask if you could sort of expand on Prabhupada's comment where he, because someone may question that the woman is being passed around, like from the father to the son, or I should say father, husband, children, as if it were some commodity.
Yes. He says that's an aspect of Manu Samhita, which was the system. But among there's different perspectives that one can look at, how we look at the world. One is from the highest is how it looks from Krishna's perspective. And, it is like, from a higher perspective, and this is brought out in the discussion of the soul of Chitraketu's dead son and Narada Muni. It's that, like, we're all like commodity being passed around, in the sense that the soul is being passed from body to body, and in that, just like money is passed from one person to another in the course of different exchanges. So, from that higher perspective, everything is Krishna's property. It's not my property that I own and I can transfer to someone else. So that's kind of how I look at it. But another thing I mentioned is that property implies responsibility as well. Like if something is, if one chooses to look at things in that way, to impose a very limited concept of property, then we should consider that property implies responsibility for the upkeep and maintenance and good condition of what one possesses. If one possesses an automobile, one has to make sure it's properly licensed and registered and has insurance and is being properly maintained and repaired so it can perform its function. Having a person as one's responsibility implies a lot of other things beyond just the fact that one, according to that way of looking at things, owns it, which isn't really the case. But okay, Archito.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Obviously, we could do weeks of discussion on this topic, but just to make it short, it's not just the daughter is the property of the father, the son also. So it's not just, my daughter is my property, the son can do whatever the hell he wants. No. We've seen so many cases from the very beginning. Narada Muni is the son of Brahma, so Brahma was upset when he didn't want to do what he wanted him to do. When the four Kumaras, they're sons of Brahma, he was upset when they didn't want him to do what he wanted them to do. So it's not just that the daughter is the property, the son is also considered the property. But this is the ideal society. This is being directed at ideal personalities. Who wouldn't want to be the property of Swayambhuva Manu, whether son or daughter? Which woman wouldn't want to be the property of Kardama Muni, ideal sage, who can manifest an aerial mansion and take you all over the universe and have a good time? Who wouldn't want to be the property of Kapila Dev as son? So these things are being directed at ideal personalities. Notably, Prabhupada didn't say that my disciples have to take up this attitude. He never said that. He's just telling us what the ideal situation was. So if we try to emulate that falsely, then we'll run into trouble. And Prabhupada demonstrated that with his female disciples. When they got married, if their husbands went off the rails, Prabhupada didn't say you must follow him. No, just the opposite. He said you've both taken vows. If he's not following the vows, then you come into the temple and serve Krishna. Krishna is your eternal husband. Krishna is your eternal father. You don't have to follow that rascal. You stay here and do what you know you're supposed to do. So Prabhupada didn't advocate that a woman must follow the husband no matter whatever he does because she's his property. So we should get that very clear. Prabhupada was not advocating this attitude towards his disciples. He was just telling us what ideal society was like.
Prabhu, could you give some practical attitude or behavior with those new persons coming to Krishna consciousness and are not very familiar when it comes to the point of affection? Because it was mentioned that, you know, Queen Kunti, she could have made that elevated prayer of cut off my relationship, but the Brisnis, the Pandavas, and we know that they're also devotees. Sometimes someone new might artificially do things that might not necessarily be that Krishna conscious. Could you give some practical...
Can you give a practical example of someone misunderstanding and
how to deal with this with family members, friends, or someone else? Because there's some affection, there's some attachment. You know, we join, but we still have friends, relatives, mother, father, and...
Well, I kind of like the example of, what was it, Bharata Maharaj and the deer. Yeah, he was affectionate towards the deer, but he was more affectionate than he should have been because he had his sadhana. He was supposed to be performing different meditations and sacrifices. And he got so distracted by his affection to the deer that he gave up his spiritual practice. And for that, had to take the body of a deer for one lifetime before getting another human birth is Jad Bharat. So affection can be there, but it has to be within the proper limits so that one's practice of bhakti yoga continues undisturbed. Practical example. In the early 1980s, I was here, and I was engaged in preaching. I was in the Brahmachari ashram, and one day I got called to a meeting with one of the householders in the community, you know, kind of a leading person, and said some women in the community have been asking about you. And I said, stop right there. I don't want to hear who it is or what, you know, if you say another word, I'm just walking out. Because at that time, I had an image of myself and I was being told, oh, you should be a sannyasi. And so that attitude was there, where you know, you may have some affection, but an attraction, but because of some conception you have of yourself, you deny it. So that's one thing that can, where ignoring one's feelings and trying to be something that you're not, that can take over. So that's a practical example of one way feelings of affection can be denied. Then the other way it can be, such things can be denied or misunderstood, is that if one focuses on satisfying one's desires for affectionate relationships, whether it's with family members or a spouse or whatever, and one gets distracted from one's practice of devotional service, then that's another way things can go wrong in a practical way. You know, practically speaking, in your life, you'll see you'll drift away from the real objective of human life, which is pure devotional service to Krishna. Okay. All right. I think we'll stop there. Hare Krishna.